right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, December 6, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is a nippy. I don't even know. Hold on. I'm a little behind the eight ball. Let's get time and temperature. Time is 10:02 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Actually, I think we're on Eastern Daylight Savings Time. And the temperature is 29 degrees and mostly cloudy here in upstate New York. Oh, well, I'm glad everyone's here. It's Wednesday. We made it halfway. First week after New Year. Pretty difficult. Doesn't feel any different than the week before New Year or 10, 20 weeks before that. The hamster wheel is in full session. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show GMO Mosquitoes, Biowarfare, Oxitec, Orange Juice, and InterExon. Then orange juice was mine. But we talked about drinking the organic orange juice versus the store-bought orange juice and the effect that it had, at least in my case in particular, on my stomach. And it seems that organic orange juice does not fry the crap out of your guts, which is pretty interesting. But, yeah, so we were talking about InterExon purchasing Oxitec, Oxitec being the company responsible for releasing these genetically modified mosquitoes all over the place, sprinkling them around tropical nether regions for the last few years. And in some cases, without any type of environmental impact study, I saw that, I don't know if they were just being sued or if there was an investigation that was ensuing, but they were in some trouble for one of their GMO mosquito projects. An investigation was being done by legal authorities to determine whether or not they could be held for negligence. Doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, they've tried to do things down in the Keys that, you know, they wanted to just do the slick willy and let mosquitoes go. And then they just mysteriously blew into town anyway after the people said that they didn't want the mosquitoes. But look, I'm going to tell you what. We've been talking about these genetically modified mosquitoes and Ebola and all these formerly tropical diseases that now are spreading to places that typically weren't warm enough. We had dengue fever showing up in some of the most curious places last year. You remember, dengue showed up in Japan. They were like, oh, we don't know how it showed up in Japan. I haven't seen this in Japan in 50 years. Must be global warming. That's what they said. And we laughed about it. Global warming. Well, New York Times, January 4th, 2016. The U.S. becomes more vulnerable to tropical diseases like Zika. Because of why? Because of climate change. Tropical diseases. So, you know, there's an agenda here. As these diseases are marching forward, and they had maps showing them now marching forward from the lower southern warm, toasty regions now all the way right up to our border, knocking to get in. Tropical diseases, some of them never before seen in the United States. And I mean, they even use my raisin eyebrow words, right? Anytime they say never before seen, first time ever, we don't know where it came from. Yeah, those are usually signs. Tropical diseases, some of them never before seen in the United States, are marching northward as climate change lets mosquitoes and ticks expand their ranges. So, hey, if flying little vaccine distributing genetically modified freak mosquitoes aren't bad enough, remember, we had looked at last year, and there's no one who could argue with me, we had looked at the former biowarfare program, Plum Island, its association with some of the Operation Paperclip scientists that they brought over, who, like, spent their careers studying using insects as disease vectors to spread biowarfare agents. Oh, yeah, evil, evil people like that came and worked for us and helped us develop weaponized insects. That's a long time ago, and don't worry about it, because Richard Nixon inked the agreement that said that we couldn't practice that stuff anymore. It's kind of evil, right? Well, maybe not, because we now have all kinds of disease ticks on the loose, right? Ticks can even spread bubonic plague, just like fleas can. But we also found out there was some new tick-borne disease, and I don't remember what the name of it was, but we played that clip a few times. Up in New Hampshire, Massachusetts, they had seen it, or Maine. It was up in the upper New England. But it's spreading, and it's worse than Lyme disease. There is no treatment whatsoever, and you better hope that your doctor can keep you comfortable, because you're going to die. Yeah, that was frightening. And then, again, was just like Lyme as far as being able to transmit it via a simple bite. Now, remember, we looked yesterday, too, or maybe the day before, at this new strain. Not one, not two, but three. Three contagious cancers now that they found down in Tasmania and the poor little Tasmanian devils. And it's just amazing how all these things are mutating never before seen ranges for all these diseases. And we're just so overcome by disease now on this planet. It's just incredible. We might have to roll out a bunch of new vaccines. Oh, wait. Oh, I get it now. Yes. And then get the Medevac, Google Medevac drones. I saw one of the tests. I had looked at the story before. I mentioned doing the first Amazon test and was delivering vaccines. Couldn't find that story yesterday when I tried to look it up, but I remember reading that. But what I did find is when Google was doing some testing on their new products, maybe it was Google, they had delivered couple different things to a farmer in an outback in Australia. One of those things were cattle vaccinations. So I thought that was pretty nice. Go Google. All right. Anyway, so let's get back to climate change. So climate change is going to kill us all. It's going to make the mosquitoes, the flying disease vector mosquitoes, that have way more diseases than West Nile like we're used to. That's about the worst we ever had up here, really. We had Lyme disease, and ticks are always bad, but this last year, they were supposed to be of pandemic proportions. They warned us that the woods are going to be so loaded with them. And we did a few shows on ticks. Ticks are so tiny. If you see some examples of what ticks look like, and there are some that are big, and of course if you're gonna have a big swollen one that's sucking blood off you, you're probably gonna feel it. But some of the little tiny ones are literally like a grain of pollen the size of a head of a pin, if that even. And once those burrow into you, those little fangy poisons that they have. More little biting freaks. These are jumping freaks, not flying freaks like the mosquitoes. But who knows what they've done to them? Guys, there was a lot of strange stuff. If you don't believe me, and I know you guys do, I mean, people who don't normally listen to this show, if you don't believe me, dig into Plum Island. And that's the same Plum Island now that they're moving to the Heartland off of the coast of New York City. They're now moving it to the Heartland, Kansas. Manhattan, Kansas, mind you. Where they're going to take some of the most virulent pathogens known to man and to animal, mind you, because that was studying a lot of different animal diseases at that Plum Island. And it's going to drop it smack dab in the middle of the country. Right in Tornado Alley. All right, anyway, back to climate change, mosquitoes, and ticks expanding their ranges. So anyway, because of climate change, yes, the march northward of all these pesky little insects that carry lots of disease has started. But according to scientists, that does not mean that epidemics will break out. No, don't worry about it. Whether or not a few cases explode into a full-fledged outbreak depends on a set of factors that are far more complex than weather, you puny human. How silly of you to think so. Well, the list of scary bug-borne illnesses seems to get longer and longer every year. Lyme, West Nile, Chagas, Dengue, Chikungunya, and now Zika. The first case, which turned up in Puerto Rico last week, and I told you that it was all about Brazil, northeastern Brazil, and then it was like, oh no, it's spreading, and now it's in Puerto Rico, right to the south. Some factors in the new spread are, for now, unstoppable, say scientists. The weather is hotter. The airfares are cheaper. I just saw last night, speaking of cheap airfares, I saw last night, it was weird, it was in Facebook. It's like, oh, got the winter blues. There's a JetBlue ad. Now, they were like, oh, cheap tickets to all kinds of cities. I actually saw it in Rochester. You don't normally get them out of Rochester because we're just little rinky-dinky airport. But out of Rochester to New York City, $109. Actually, it might have been $94. I haven't seen them that cheap, though that's one way. We used to get that for a round trip when right around college time. But still, that's pretty cheap. But this is not the time of year you really want to go to New York City either, especially if you don't know anybody. All right, anyway. So, yes, some factors in the new spread are, for now, unstoppable, scientists say. The weather is hotter. Airfares are cheaper, meaning humans travel more than they did a decade ago. And cities in the tropical countries are becoming more crowded, creating nurseries, like the way they put it, creating nurseries for each disease. You know, story I read a few days back in regards to how the Zika made it to Brazil. They were trying to say that it was the World Cup. Did you guys see that? It was World Cup and they had like some canoe competition or boating competition of some kind. And it must have rode up on the canoe with the contestants from, I don't know, were they coming from another tropical island somewhere? I really don't know, but all I imagine was this crew in a canoe with all these freaking mosquitoes flying around their heads and then showing up in Brazil. And it's ridiculous. It's absolutely, it's as ridiculous as the monster mosquitoes that are 20 times normal size, that just blew up in Hurricane Debbie in Florida. I don't believe it. All right, back to the story. So, yes, the cities in tropical countries are now becoming more crowded, creating nurseries for each disease. But other factors can be manipulated to stop outbreaks. God, I always love manipulated factors. Insects, of course, can be killed. Patients can be cured before they are bitten again. And of course, this one, vaccines can be developed. We'll put in a sign delivered via medevac drone. And simple measures like screens, air conditioners, and bug sprays can play a big role. Yeah, that's true. I would say screens will probably be a good first step. Brazil is now in a panic over Zika, a mosquito-borne virus that may be causing thousands of babies to be born with tiny heads and brains, a defect called microencephaly. But until May of this past year, 2015, I've noticed a few different dates. Like, I saw in a science publication, June 5th, I believe, was the first case ever that they saw. New York Times is saying it's May. So, who knows, a month or two. But until May, Zika could never touch this hemisphere. Except on Easter Island, 2,200 miles off the Chilean coast. But now it circulates in how many? 14 Latin American, Caribbean countries in Puerto Rico. Oh, what? Are those some of the same countries that Oxitec released some of their genetically modified mosquitoes in? Oh, I think it is. Early last month, an official from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention predicted that Zika would follow the pattern in the United States that dengue has. Many cases in Puerto Rico, followed by outbreaks in Florida, the Gulf Coast states, and maybe Hawaii. But then the CDC is unwilling to predict the aftermath, including whether all the outbreaks will be snuffed out before any babies will suffer. Now, when your children start getting injured, you know that there's a serious problem. And are they going to hold our children hostage, act on climate change? Otherwise, your children are going to be victims to the flying little freaks of poison called mosquitoes. Anyway, CDC says information is pretty limited. According to Dr. Aaron Staples, a CDC epidemiologist on vector-borne diseases of Brazil's outbreak, there has not been enough testing for Zika, so it is not known how many women have been infected. Prominent virologists say Zika plays a role in microencephaly, but they are not sure that it is the only cause. It may depend, for example, and whether the mother was previously infected with dengue, a related virus. How far the infection can spread in the United States will depend on whether the Asian tiger mosquito, and that is the, this is a little bit different one. It's not the Aedes aegypti. This is the Aedes alopictus. Pictus? These words first thing in the morning are pretty funny. Albopictus, yes, the Aedes albopictus mosquito, which turns out to transmit just as efficiently as the Aedes aegypti, which is the yellow fever mosquito. The yellow fever mosquito is not usually seen much farther north than Washington, D.C. and Kentucky. Well, phew for me in New York. But the chill-tolerant Asian tiger mosquito is sometimes found as far north as New York and Chicago. Woo! Now that's some cold weather for mosquitoes. Pest control will be crucial. Florida's two dengue outbreaks in Key West in 2010 and in Martin County in 2013 were stopped by aggressive anti-mosquito measures, including aerial spraying, larvicide in ponds, and neighborhood sweeps for containers that hold water. Zika's arrival in the hemisphere, only 1 year. Yeah, how amazing is that? Listen to what they said here. Holy crap. Zika's arrival in this hemisphere, only 1 year after Chickamauga, is, quote, probably a coincidence, unquote. says Scott C. Weaver, the director of the Institute for Human Infections and Immunity at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston. Both outbreaks demonstrate that illnesses do not inevitably follow weather patterns. They often follow linguistics or ethnic ones. Wait a second. Keywords. Now, didn't we discover when we were looking at Ebola that there was some evidence that some of these quote-unquote never-before-seen, oh-my-God, mutating viruses that are appearing all over because of climate change seem to be targeting people because of their ethnicity or their genetics? Yes, there really was some question about that. And now they make a comment in here about outbreaks show that illnesses don't inevitably follow the warm weather patterns. No, they might follow your language like all Spanish-speaking countries or ethnic ones. Now, that's just beyond superstitious. Yeah, you know, because I'm a banana-eating country. Those mosquitoes must come in on the bananas on the sailing ships. And that's why, right? Right. I don't know. Guys, don't trust anything they say. Pick it apart like a nitpickety hen pecker, if that's a phrase. Take out your aggression on the mainstream news story and pick it apart like the turkey vultures picking out the juicy eyeballs. That's what I like to do. It gives me pleasure. Not picking out juicy eyeballs. Picking apart MSM news stories, especially from places like the New York Times. All right. In this hemisphere, Chickamauga was first seen, very first time ever, seen in late 2013 on the island of Saint Martin. It started in the island's French-speaking half and jumped over to other Francophone islands and to French Guiana, says Dr. Staples. Zika then arrived on Easter Island in 2014. And although the island is Chilean territory, its original population was Polynesian. Those mosquitoes must have been on a Frenchy kick then. Zika, what does that have to do with anything? Zika has been island hopping in the South Pacific since 2007. Easter Island holds an annual festival that attracts Polynesians who may have brought Zika with them. The virus probably reached Brazil by a different route with the influx of tourists during the 2014 World Cup or from paddlers from French Polynesia who participated in a canoe race in Rio de Janeiro. There you go. So it was one of two things. It wasn't bringing the mosquitoes from some little island nation on a canoe for the World Cup. It was either the 2014 World Cup or paddlers from French Polynesia participating in a canoe race in Rio de Janeiro, according to the New York Times. West Nile virus, which appeared in this hemisphere back in 1999. And yeah, I remember when it first happened, we started finding dead crows and blackbirds around. That was one of the first signs that there was an airborne disease, and they started warning about mosquitoes. We also had Lyme cooking away up here, an infected wildlife. And that's been for quite a number of years as well, but makes you wonder if they didn't do a few little sprinkles up here. 1999. The 90s were pretty bad as far as what we've been finding for Plum Island and some of the GMOs and things that were released that we were never told about. It was all in the 90s, and they've been experimenting on the population for a very long time without our consent. West Nile virus, which appeared in the hemisphere in 1999, famously exemplifies a virus moving independent of climate change. Yeah, that's why I said Plum Island, ding. Outbreak began where? Oh, in New York City. What? Yes, in New York City, just inland from Plum Island. And the strain, oh, this is even better. The outbreak began in New York City, and the strain was 99% identical to who? To an Israeli version. Yes, Israel. Israel's version of West Nile virus. That so many virologists now believe it must have arrived in the blood of someone on a plane. So MI6 sent us over a typhoid Nile, West Nile virus Mary from Tel Aviv to JFK and then told him to go stand out in Times Square from Israel. Interesting. First cases were in Queens. Oh, so they didn't send him to Times Square. They sent him to Queens. Home to the Kennedy National Airport. So, all right, he didn't fly into JFK. Oh, yeah, he did. Wait, Kennedy. Yes, he did. He flew into JFK. So the virus might also have been hiding with one of those pesky stowaway mosquitoes. Come on! Now, we have stowaway mosquitoes from Israel coming on planes. Is that what this is saying? Oh, my God. West Nile virus then from the one single Israeli West Nile virus mosquito in Queens spread slowly out west, halting each winter as the mosquitoes died off. And the birds they fed on flew south. Oh, birdies. I mean, what is this? They're like telling a storybook about the arrival of West Nile virus in 1999 in New York City. And it took until 2005 to reach the Pacific Northwest. So in 4 years, it spread from New York City all the way to the Pacific Northwest. That's pretty incredible. Hey, those little wings. Bzz, and what's the lifespan of a mosquito? For them to go from sea to shining sea in just 4 years? Isn't that some incredible bionic mosquito speed? I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but 2,000 plus miles for little tiny wings that only probably have a lifespan of about a week. Seems like an incredible distance to me. And it says mosquito-borne pathogens are not the only ones on the move. Ticks can carry more than 30 infections, and some, including Rocky Mountain spotted fever, can be fatal. Yes, and the Black Plague and the pneumonic plague. Don't forget, we had cases of both of those this past summer. That infection, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, once banished from northern Mexico, is again surging and moving up into Arizona for the first time, according to Gerardo Alvarez, an epidemiologist at the University of Sonora. Children, especially those who sleep besides dogs, children, especially those who sleep beside dogs, I guess because dogs could carry ticks, are the hardest hit. And in some Indian reservations in Arizona, they've held rodeos of the semi-feral dogs that roam from house to house, putting tick collars on them. Elsewhere in the United States, the Gulf Coast tick is expanding north as well. And other species that carry a combined 18 infections and infectious bacteria are now being found in all kinds of new places. Notice they're not even talking about another type of infestation. I don't know if you guys have looked at any of this or if you do any type of traveling, but if you do traveling, there is like a major epidemic, from what I've been reading, of bed bugs in New York City. And I don't just mean hotels, and I don't mean just some little shitty hotel. I'm meaning like everywhere, all over, including the expensive hotels and in the taxi cabs, they're finding them. And they get on you, they get on your luggage, they travel everywhere, and they suck blood. Yeah, look into New York City's epidemic with bed bugs, and they're having a really hard problem controlling those. Anyway, elsewhere in the United States, the Gulf Coast tick is expanding north, and other species that carry a combined of 18 infectious bacteria are now being found in new places. The importance of living conditions and medical treatment is exemplified by malaria, one of Billy Gates' favorites. And once, it once was widespread in the South and raged as far north as Boston, Massachusetts in the hot summers. That must have been before my time. But in this newfangled age of jet travel, almost 2,000 Americans return from overseas with malaria each year, but these outbreaks do not occur because the victims are usually treated quickly and they kill the parasite in their blood. Hey, we're going to have Google Medevac treatment and diagnosis drones at the push of a touch button on that newfangled smartphone of yours. You just wait and see. I'm sure Google is going to have some malaria treatment for you. Quinine water. It says, furthermore, most American homes have screens and air conditioners, so the inhabitants only get a few bites a year, not the hundreds that the poor child living in a windowless shack in Rio or Mexico City might. So be happy. Be happy that you have screens and air conditioners here in the good old US of A. You could be third world. Zika's passage through the United States should be easier to follow than it was in Brazil, said Dr. Weaver. Yeah, because we don't know. We don't know if it came in on the Brazil Cup or on a canoe from Rio de Janeiro. I mean, poof, it just got here and it spread like wildfire. Many Brazilians have had dengue or have been vaccinated against yellow fever, soon to be dengue. They just in the middle of all this came out just a few days ago and said, da-da-da-da, guess what? We have the very first dengue fever vaccination on the planet ever. And we're going to start testing it where? Brazil. Yeah. So Brazil, put on a seatbelt, you poor people. I hope there's some Brazilians listening to this show. Don't believe what they tell you. I mean, the disease is probably real, but it didn't come up on a canoe from Rio de Janeiro. Those damn canoeing infected mosquitoes. Many Brazilians have had dengue or have been vaccinated against yellow fever, and they have antibodies in their blood that could cause false positive results on tests for the Zika virus. Very few Americans have those antibodies, so testing should be more effective here. And on the other hand, Zika produces symptoms like fever and rash far less often than dengue, so it may be spread by silent carriers who feel well. And that's what's so interesting about this. Dal dropped me a video the other day. I don't think we're going to have time to play it today, but I was watching it yesterday about signs and symptoms of Zika. And it typically is very mild. It doesn't cause any major symptoms in adults that get bitten. You know, they get a little rash. Maybe they don't feel good. Maybe a little fever or whatever. But it's like they're not dying. It's not like everybody's going to be bleeding out orifices or, you know, uncontrollably vomiting out both ends. And it's not an illness like that. It's like maybe you get a little rash. You don't feel good. But most people recover no problem. So the fact that we're having these out of the blue, not, I mean, and like a lot of these mothers didn't even know. And that's why they were saying, well, we're not even sure. Maybe they didn't get bitten by mosquitoes with the Zika. Maybe it had something to do with the original dengue outbreak that's causing this microencephaly. But to me, it just seems pretty extreme. If it's not really going to cause any major symptoms in the adult, and they're thinking that these birth defects are now being caused by this, especially after Oxitec just released those genetically modified mosquitoes, like we've said here, we've been establishing this now for two or three shows. But it bothers me because there's just such a big, bold Sharpie line between the two. Like, not just in a black Sharpie, like in those rainbow-colored 22 Sharpies. We can get the purple and the gold. Just all the lines with big arrows pointing from one to the other. It's very horrifying. And now, Oxitec was bought by an even more dubious company, Interexon, that owns all these other great ways to genetically modify things and then release them to the American public or the global public for that matter. Like those, you know, never browning apples that they want to put in Johnny's lunch. All right, let me see where I was. I get all wound up and then I lose my place. So very few Americans have these antibodies. So testing should be real easy with the Medivac drone. On the other hand, 2016 is going to be the year of the drones. You wait and see. On the other hand, Zika produces symptoms like fever and rash far less often than dengue. And so it may be spread by silent carriers who feel well. And yeah, that's the other thing. Some of these viruses actually are transmissible then between people. So it's not just mosquito to person, and then potentially person to person. That sounds like the makings of a pandemic to me. In 2009, Dr. Weaver was the co-author of a paper that foresaw the emergence of the Zika virus in the Americas. Although he envisioned Japanese encephalitis. Yes, he envisioned the Zika moving up into the Americas, but when he was envisioning how this was all going to work out in his evil mind, which I don't know, I don't really know anything about Dr. Weaver, but it's just wonderful how they like envision these scenarios. He envisioned it with Japanese encephalitis and Rift Valley fever as the two greatest threats. He ranked Zika in the quote-unquote also keep an eye on category with yellow fever and Mayero virus. We haven't heard that one yet. Mayaro. Don't worry about it. They're saving that one for after June. I don't know. Mayero. We'll have to look that one up. Zika may have changed in the last decade, he said. It may have increased its transmissibility in the 80s Egypte, or its ability to build up to higher levels in the bloodstream. Yeah, amazing how those mutations just happen out there in nature, huh? Nothing to do with the genetically modified Oxitec mosquitoes at all. Shh. And in the scientific community, it has caught many of us by surprise, added Dr. Weaver. Before 2007, Zika was pretty much obscure, he says. And that is the end of the New York Times story. So look how amazing. It was obscure before 2007. 2008, as a matter of fact, the year they turned on that Large Hadron Collider. I'll never forget that. I used to keep a blog back in those days. I was like, uh-oh, shit's going to get weird now. You just wait and see. We'll look back on this and go, wow, what happened in the days before all the crazy? And it did. Got real weird. I actually, the reason why I bring that up is because and I don't think we ever did these stories about black holes, dark matter, and the heating of the Earth's core, but there was some research out there that was showing that potentially our interaction with dark matter, and they've been doing a lot of dark matter searching not only in space, but with the Large Hadron Collider and trying to create it. But there was research going on showing how dark matter and us passing through like dark matter planes or whatever they call them in space is causing our core to heat up. Yes, the core. And as the core of the planet heats up, guess what else heats up? Oh, what? The planet. Yeah. And I had begun postulating. I'm like, you know, we're doing all this mad science like at a cosmological level. Playing with technology, and I mean, we're doing it at so many levels, at a nano level, at a cosmological level, micro and the macro to the extreme. So looking at the macro to the extreme, the Large Hadron Collider and all the space stuff. I just lost my train of thought. I hate when I do that. I looked at chat. Damn. But anyway, it just raised some alarm bells to me that they're doing all these experiments and yeah, the planet temperature is going up, but we still, I tell you, I am not convinced, especially after I saw them rework that whole NOAA report as to how all of a sudden there was no global cooling, right? We mentioned that yesterday. They had been saying that we were going into a solar minimum and, oh, it's going to be a mini ice age. All of a sudden, that's just totally off the map now. Oh, all those scientists are totally wrong. Whoops, we made a mistake. The buoys were taking wrong readings. And we are not, we are headed for climate change. We are headed for global warming. And that's the way it's always been. And we've never seen a downtick. Nope. I don't know. Don't believe anything they say. Read. Be sarcastic. Decode. And eventually the answers sort themselves out. Actually, I saw something the other day talking about being sarcastic. I don't know if we'll get there. All right, so this is the end of that story. So we knew it was coming. Zika, of course, made the headlines just like Ebola. And they amped and ramped it up. And now they're going to use it to spin their agenda. And their agenda happens to be, oh, it's climate change. So here come all these weird new fangled things that only were in the tropical nether regions. And they're going to end up here in the good old U.S. of A. and start mutating humans so that we might have to get some sort of newfangled vaccination would be my guess on that one. So I'm not really sure where we're going to jump off. I have had probably a week's worth of shows queued up and multiple browser crashes, so I've tried to reconstruct, and I think I put together a good progression today. Here's one out of the Daily Mail. I know some people hate this publication, but this one was a pretty good one. Superintelligence of AI and humans working together could what? Now remember, we've been reading all this stuff about AI and the dangers of AI and of unmanned killings and decision making by artificial intelligence. Good old Elon Musk. Right? We've gone through all that over and over and over again. But check it out. This is how they're going to spin it now, guys. You're not going to believe it. You're not going to believe what AI. It's going to get all warm and fuzzy and help us with superintelligence of AI and humans working together could solve not only climate change, but it could also end wars, claim researchers. Yes, we could fix climate change and end wars as long as we give it up to the machine. In the fight against wicked, in quotation marks, problems. Computers may be humans' best allies. Researchers from the Human Computation Institute and Cornell University say that the combination would create a superintelligence and it could take on growing issues like climate change and geopolitical conflict. So we're going to use the great oracle. You're going to have a crystal ball that you rub. Oh, great oracle, supercomputer AI. I need help solving climate change and geopolitical conflict. New technologies use crowdsourced input and interactive tools to produce collaborative results that go beyond traditional problem solving, they claim. Wicked problems are those which are difficult to solve because of the complexity of the underlying issues. And they may involve many interacting systems which are always changing, and the solutions have unforeseen consequences, according to the Human Computation Institute. I haven't really heard of them before either. By joining with computer intelligence, humans could expand upon their own abilities to create, quote, multidimensional collaborative networks, the researchers say. And I'll tell you where this is going to come in handy is we've been looking at all these 3D virtual reality goggles and immersion, this augmented cognition, augmented reality type stuff. This is going to be big. I'm telling you, 2016 is the year. You just wait until every couch drooling sports nut gets their hands on a set of VR goggles for $29.95 a month. They could subscribe with the football channel or the hockey channel or whatever the hell they want and get front row seats to every single event this year. They can go to concerts, front row seats. And you know what? Then on Monday morning, you can pull those same 3D goggles out, go up to the office, and be teleported, basically, into a room with three other engineers while you guys are working on your touchable hologram blueprint in the same virtual room together. I mean, I got to tell you, the stuff scares me because we've talked a lot about how it just bleeds and blends any distinguishing factors now, especially in people who have been conditioned to live in the online world from being children, right? I mean, we came pre. We're the old fogies. We knew the world before. But I mean, the ones who came after, a generation or two, who never knew the world without computers or television or any of the other technological advances we have now, they can't distinguish, and especially the video games. The video games sucked them in. The reality TV sucked them in. They're so sucked in now that VR goggles and this full immersion is just the natural next step, but it really bleeds the line between what is real and what isn't and how we interact with the world around us. Anyway, back to the story. Current systems of this type rely on individually completed micro tasks, which are later stitched together for final results. So these are talking about collaborative environments to solve all the big problems like what? Oh, climate change and geopolitical strife. New technologies aim to approach wicked problems. I never quite, it's three times in this article they called them wicked problems. Never heard. Wicked is something that I reserve for the wicked. Wicked problems where microtasking alone fails, breaching the traditional limits. While humans outperform machines in certain tasks like pattern recognition and creative abstraction. Yeah, that's what my show is all about. Pattern recognition and creative abstraction. I had to give it a definition. Combining these two could make for an unprecedented approach to global problems. One Cornell problem called the yardmap.org uses human computation to map global conservation efforts. And in this interactive platform, participants can build upon each other's work. And by sharing and observing practices in a map-based social network, people can begin to relate their individual efforts to the global conservation potential of living and working landscapes. Crowd input is also being used to make research more efficient. Cornell-based Alzheimer's research on WeCureAlts.com is produced through an interactive tool in which users play a game to help analyze data. You know, I've actually heard that a few times. They had, I don't remember what the games were. They had a couple different games. I know one was some sort of space, you know, where they had people in there with all the, some of the space imagery. But I don't even know if that one was a game. But there was another one where they had gamers trying to, whatever, however the game worked, by them figuring out how to solve the game, they actually were figuring out much larger scientific problems that they didn't even realize by working through the problem solving in the game. It's pretty tricky. Sure, it's DOD and some of the Lizard's Den brain research project that are working on some of these things. Anyway, I don't know. So the end of the story, by enabling members of the general public to play some simple online game. Yes, you've been tricked again, Johnny. We are expecting to reduce the time to treatment discovery from the decades to just a few years. And that gives us an opportunity for anyone, including the tech-savvy generation of caregivers and early stage Alzheimer's patients, to take matters into their own hands. Wow, that was a very odd story. So are they talking crowdsourcing? I don't know. I don't really get what that was about, but where the artificial intelligence lives, I guess, is in the game. AI and humans working together. So they need our input, people. They need to build it, and then we need to show them where it's wrong and where they need to fix it. Beta testers required. All right, here's another one. We talked about microbiome, the gut, DARPA, ElectRx program, some of the research they've been doing, how they've been learning that the gut bacteria and the microbiome is very important, our epigenetics, even stress in our life, has now been shown to actually affect future generations in your genetic code. January 5th, 2016, this came actually out of my feed late last night, and what got me was the cute little fuzzy squirrel. There's a cute little fuzzy squirrel picture. Researchers discover links between stress and unhealthy microbiomes. Well, I could have told you that. Actually, I think it has a lot to do with that whole cascading disease that many of us have gotten and have started with the shitty GMO food that completely screwed up your immune system and your digestion and gave you the leaky gut, messed up your microbiome, all the antibiotics that we've been overprescribed, right, that are now causing the superbacteria, killed our gut. And it directly, with that vagus nerve, connects from your gut to your brain, which then can be responsible for lots of psychiatric illnesses, including depression and stress and other things. Red squirrels living in a low-stress environment. I know, damn, we wouldn't want to have stressed-out squirrels now, especially in a small room. Red squirrels living in a low-stress environment harbor healthier communities of microorganisms, a result that may hold implications for human health, according to a new University of Guelph, PH-led study. I believe University of Guelph is up in Canada. Researchers tested squirrel microbiomes. Those little tiny squirrel microbiomes. And analyzed the animal's stress hormones. Why couldn't they, test human microbiomes and then take ones that are in a high-stress environment, ones that are in a low-stress environment, test them? Why are we doing stressed-out, non-stressed-out squirrels? Oh, my goodness. I don't know, guys. I'm a little slap-happy this morning. This is all just seeming amusing to me. Researchers tested squirrel microbiomes and analyzed the animal's stress hormones, and their study appeared in the Journal of Biology Letters. Microbiomes are communities of microorganisms living in and on the bodies of all living things, including people. Found in the mouth. I didn't realize they were in your mouth, too, but I guess so. Found in the mouth and gut and on the skin, microbiomes consist of a mix of beneficial and potentially harmful bacteria that changes constantly and can affect the host's health. A diverse microbiome is generally a good thing for your health. It's why people take probiotics, said lead researcher Mason Stotart, a former undergraduate student in the Department of Integrative Biology. We wanted to understand the relationship between the microbiome and stress. The greater the stress in the squirrels, the less bacterial diversity they had, which could be an indicator of poor health. Slow Thart and a Laurentian, Laurentian, university graduate student trapped squirrels. They went out trapping squirrels in Algonquin Park in Ontario, and that's what we do for fun up here. They took mouth swabs and fecal samples. Oh, my God. Those poor little squirrels. It was like they were abducted by aliens, which were then analyzed in a lab. The researchers found that the microbiomes were more diverse in squirrels with lower stress hormone. As a second part of Little Nippy's experiment, we captured those same squirrels. Now, how did they do that? We captured those same squirrels up to 2 weeks later and found that if stress levels increased, yeah, like trapping them in a have-a-heart trap twice, some bacteria that are potentially harmful also increased. This is the first study of its kind to be conducted in a natural environment, says Professor Amy Newman, senior author of the study. So those poor little squirrels got captured and made stressed out so we could see what their microbiome was going to do. All right, guys, yes, put suet out for your woodpeckers because it is cold and those squirrels will come too, and you can take your own microbiome experiments. All right, guys, well, guess what? That was it. That was a fast Wednesday. Make sure you stick around. It is Wednesday night. We have Lonnie Clark up next, and then Josh live at 6 p.m. Eastern. The Boys from New York at 8 p.m. 9 o'clock, Truth or Talk. This is going to be probably the last one in this slot. This week's rebroad. And at 11, Antimedia Radio with Nick and DB. All right, guys. Everybody make sure you stick around for Wednesday, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.